Welcome, everybody. As always, it's a tremendous inspiration to be here. We do work hard on making this the best that we can possibly do, and ultimately, the real success is everybody that comes and puts in real kaya, real effort, real asmada, real amelus, and you feel it from every part of the room. The gishmak, the excitement, the enjoyment that everybody's having from being able to spend time and really immerse in a sugya. And it gives me tremendous chizuk, and it gives, as I tell other people about it, just hearing about it gives tremendous chizuk, but it certainly gives all of us a tremendous chizuk, and Baruch Hashem, we're able to do this, and Ritz Hashem, we'll be able to continue doing this. Rav Ari asked me not to thank him, but I thank him anyway. Specifically, I want to thank him personally because we work together, and he's a tremendous ball of energy, and he really is, it's his chiyus and his dedication to making this the best possible that really made it a pleasure to work with and encouraged me to do my best and try to, so we can make this the best possible, Baruch Hashem. So thank you again, Rav Ari. The sugya of Gneivas Das is a topic that encompasses many areas, both of life and of business. And it's amazing that there are people, many people, that aren't even aware. Maybe they've heard the topic, they've heard the term, but they don't even know what it applies to. And it's like something we should essentially be teaching our children in cheder, because it's a constant. Once you become aware of it, you'll be amazed how often this comes up. I just had it last week. I made a simcha, and my charusa lived on the other side of town, came by Matzah Shabbos to wish me mazel tov, and he said, you know, I don't want this to be Gneivas Das, I happen to be on this side of town anyway. So it just, once you become aware of the sugya, it just starts coming up on from every angle. The shilas of Gneivas Das and Tal Zakum, which we're going to be learning about tomorrow, aren't shilas that typically end up in a beis din, because they don't usually involve demanding money back from anybody. And it's shilas that if you are aware, then hopefully you'll ask a rav about it, but you'll only ask those shilas if you're aware that they are issues. And that's why it's so important to learn through these sugyas and become aware of how many applications there are and how many situations can run into questions of both Gneivas Das and Tosak. We learned a sugya this morning, and we learned a sugya now this afternoon. I divided up, calling one Gneivas Das by Matana, and this we call Gneivas Das by Mecca. The sugya we learned this morning was about causing someone to have a parasatoyim, to feel a debt of gratitude that he doesn't really have, or shouldn't really have, because you did something dishonest to make him think, deceptive, to make him think that he owes you a favor. The sugya we're learning now is more the common kind of deception that takes place in various different industries, and as we'll see, almost every industry to some extent, where in a course of a sale, some deception is applied to the sale itself. Some details, some defects, some qualities, it's played up, it's played down, and that is then causes the buyer not to be fully aware of what he is getting himself into when he made this sale. And this doesn't make a difference of how big a player you are in business or how little. Everybody buys and sells something. You can have an apartment that you rent out, you can have a car or an old car that you want to sell. You are often selling yourself. You have a resume. You kind of inflate the details on your resume. All these things are essentially questions of Gneivas Das. That's what they boil down to, and there's every person in every walk of life that will have these questions. If you're applying for a loan, you need credit, and you change the details of what your income is or what your, you know, how to qualify for whatever it is you're applying for, again, these things run often into Gneivas Das, sometimes even to Gezel, but minimally it works, it It's certainly a question of Gnevus Das. The sugya becomes especially sensitive when we talk about another area which I'm not going to touch on today, but it very much is the sugya of Gnevus Das, which is when it comes to Shidduchim. Also, covering up and being deceptive about aspects of the Shidduch, whether it's the Mamonis, whether it's other things, very much can run into Gnevus Das issues. Again, we're not going to be talking about that today, but it is something to be aware of. In this shiur, I'm going to focus on what we learned today, the Seder, but I do want to give, before I start, I want to give a quick summary of the morning Seder, what we learned, so we can know what we got from the morning, and then we can move on to the second Seder. This morning, we learned Gnevus Das by Matana, as I said. So Shmuel began the sugya by teaching us that Isser of Gnevus Das applies even to a guy, even to Akum. And the situation was that you gave him a present and you made him think that it was something you worked very hard on. You took a piece of meat and you went through the whole effort to make it kosher, and therefore he feels like you've made a big effort to give him a good gift, while in truth, it was a trifle piece of meat. So he now, according to Rashi, he feels a karas hatayim to you, which you didn't earn. That was the case that Shmuel said. Then the Gemara had a brisa, which brought another bunch of other cases. One of them was if you try to convince someone to come eat by you, and you know he's not coming anyway. And then the Gemara had a case where you open up a special bottle of wine, a barrel of wine, to be mechabed him, but really you were opening it up anyway. And then lastly, we had in the end of the Gemara a machlekes with Rashi and Tosfos, which Rabbi Kleiman dealt with extensively this morning, which is the Isser only when you actively deceive the person, you tell him that this thing is something which it's not, or it's just that person makes the assumption, but you kind of lead him into that assumption, you set up the situation so that he should think so, like when the Yid gives the guy the piece of meat and he's assumed to be kosher. So the Machalikus Rashi and Tosfos is the Isser only when you say something deceptive, or even when you just make him assume that. And we Paskin like Tosfos, it's important to know. I don't know if that was so clear this morning. We pass like Tosfos, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that even if you don't say anything, but you just set up the situation so that the person thinks you're doing him a big favor and you're not, it is usur. Another important point that we learned this morning is there were four different heterim that the Gemara mentioned. The one the heter the Gemara mentioned is mekvoidei, that there's a certain heter you can do Gnevus Das when what you're really doing is trying to give the person kavod. And the simple understanding of the case is that you are giving the person a lot of kavod, and he's getting a lot of kavod. It just happens to be the way you're giving him a lot of kavod is a little deceptive. You're telling in front of many people that, oh, you know how much I love this guy, and this is what I brought for him, and the truth was, you didn't really bring it from him. But the fact is, you're giving him a lot of kavod, and he's getting a lot of kavod. So there's a heter of mipnei kvoidei. There's another heter, which was a little more in the Achrayim, Taras Chaim, and the Sma discuss it, that they call it mipnei derech eretz. And that, a classic case, would be you meet someone on the street, and he says, oh, you know, I heard you make a chasana. Now, once he says, okay, I heard you make a chasana, it's like, so you have to invite him, right? You had absolutely no intention of inviting him. So he said, oh, yeah, of course, I was thinking of inviting you. Please come and, join me by my simcha. So that's mibnei hanibus. There's a certain amount of derech eretz where it's just not, you know, that's just considered pashut derech eretz to do that at that point, and that wouldn't be considered Gnevus Das. And then a third heter we saw was where you didn't do it for this person, but you would have done it if you would have known. That was the case of Ula and Rabbi Yehuda, where he opened up the wine. He didn't open it for Rabbi Yehuda, but he would have totally opened it for him if he would have known he's coming. So Gemara says that heter as well. And then lastly, the more important heter was the Gemara Amud Beis, which is Atei Nafshei, where the person deceived himself. The situation wasn't one that the person had to assume one thing or another, and he chose to assume that you were doing something for him. You know, like one example would be the Cheder Hall, right? The Cheder Hall has two parts. When you drive in, it says that you're going to this simcha, you're going to that simcha. So if you go to one, and then someone you happen to know marginally is making the simcha on the other side, and you go there and say mazel tov to him, if he decides, oh, you must have come for me, I mean, come on, you know there's two chasanas here every night. So he's atei nafshei. He's fooling himself. There's no reason why he had to make that assumption. So those are the chidushim that we learned in the sugya this morning. Now, the sugya where we learn today has it's an interesting kind of Ganeva's Das. The first thing I want to focus on is understanding what kind of Ganeva's Das this is when you're tricking someone about the quality of a product you're selling him. And the second thing is there's a number of heterim in our sugya as well regarding selling, and there's a number of isurim. So I want to go through them and try to understand what they are and how they apply. And in the course of doing this, we're going to try to also see how it applies to many modern forms of advertising, kickbacks, influencers, and all the different ways that today's modern business world operates within or outside the Gedarim of Ganeva's Das. So let's first start and try to understand what exactly is the Ganeva's Das of our sugya. So now, we learned this morning the Ganeva's Das is a little, not so hard to understand. Ganeva's Das was, you trick a guy into thinking you did him a big favor, you give him a matana, he thinks that it's a very expensive matana, really it's not. He thinks you put in a lot of work on his behalf, and really you didn't, and therefore he now feels he has a debt of Hakaras HaTayv to you. So the Ganeva, if we were to compare it to Ganeva, and Rabbi Kleiman discussed whether it's Ganeva or it's Sheker, but regardless of what the Yisoyed HaIsser is, it has to be a Ganeva form of Isser. So the Ganeva is that I'm causing you to have a debt to me that you don't really owe me. I'm causing you to feel like you owe me to return a favor, you owe me Hakaras HaTayv, when in fact you don't. In terms of money, it would be as if I created a debt, a loan that doesn't exist. You now somehow in your account it says you owe me $100 and you don't owe me $100. It's not true. So it's not money, so that's why it's not simple stealing, but it's Ganeva's Das because I'm causing you to think that you owe me a favor when you don't. It's very straightforward why it's related to Ganeva. It's not money, but we can understand why it's related to Ganeva. In our sugya, it's certainly Ganeva's Das, because at least the Rambam says Mefurish. Yeah, the Rambam says, Asa Lermois is Bnei Adam, Bemekachum Memkar, Oiligna Bezdaitam. It's also to trick people in buying and selling or to be Ganeva's Das. So he does say that our sugya is a sugya of Ganeva's Das. But it's a little harder to understand exactly how this is a Ganeva's Das and how does it relate to the Ganeva's Das of the sugya in Chulin. They seem to be related. So one way we could understand what the Ganeva is like this. And actually, before I begin with that, I want to just clarify one thing. It's very important to understand this about the whole sugya, is that our whole sugya, there's no money issue here, meaning there's no Einah and there's no Mekach Tos. Every single case of the Gemara is a case where ultimately the amount of money that was paid was a fair price. Which means even though I deceived you and I made you think it's new, I made you think it's old, I made you think it's this, I made you think it's that, whatever it is I actually charged you was a fair price. Very important to understand it. There's no Einah. And not only that, there's no Mekach Tos either, which means even though I thought I was getting this, and it turns out I'm getting that, it's not something that I would negate the whole deal. I'm giving you, for example, when I bought my house, so checked out the house, I had it inspected. Then afterwards, I found out, maybe a month later, there was a very significant leak from the upstairs bathroom, costed thousands of dollars, had to retile the whole shower, etc. It was expensive. And I don't know, actually, if the seller knew or didn't know, but assuming the seller did know, right? So if the seller didn't know and didn't tell me, so that was Ganeva's Das. Wouldn't have changed the price. The price of the whole house wouldn't have been changed. I would have liked to negotiate, but it wouldn't have actually changed the price. And it certainly wasn't a Mekach Tos, so I was going to buy that house regardless. I did not change my decision to buy the house. What it was, if it was, would have been Ganeva's Das. That's what it would be. There was a defect that was covered up. So in every case of our Gemara, that's what it is. It's where the mamonis is going to be a fair price regardless, and it's not a Mekach Tos regardless. You're happy with the product you got. It's what you wanted, put more or less. But what did happen was you were deceived. You thought it was one thing. You thought there were different aspects to it, different qualities. You didn't know it had these defects. And it turned out you were a fool. So that's just the first thing to realize about the whole sugya. Now that being true, So then what exactly is the Geneva? What is being stolen from you? So there's two ways you can understand it, and there's a very significant difference between them. One way you can understand this is that what I'm stealing from you is your choice. Ultimately, the reason why you choose to buy something is based on how it's presented. And if I present it in a very, in a very enhanced way and make the thing seem like it's something much better than it actually is, so you are therefore encouraged to buy it. If it turns out I was lying about that, so then I took that choice from you. You chose to buy it based on something false, based on a false pretense, a false claim. Think of it like this. The advertising industry is an industry that is billions of dollars perhaps, a year. Now, what are they doing? All they're doing is trying to convince people to buy things. People hire salesmen. They pay a lot of money to salesmen. Why? So that they should convince people to buy something. Buying, the choice to buy, has a tremendous shabbos. Well, maybe you could say the whole shabbos in business is to get people to make that choice. And when you fool people into making that choice and you cause them to buy based on that deception, you've stolen that aspect of value from them. You've caused them to buy based on a lie. Now again, not enough of a lie to make a mekach tayis, not enough of a lie to make it into a na, but it was nonetheless bought with the assumption of something which wasn't true. That's one way to understand. Let me just finish this point. That's one way to understand what's going on here. Now, if we're going to understand this way, let me ask you a shaila. And this is an extraordinarily relevant question. If you have a business where you sell whatever it is you sell, product, service, rooms, whatever, and you have salesmen who are, they're paid to get a salary to do what they do. Now, your salesman, perhaps you have full knowledge of this, is not very honest. And he likes to butter up your product. And he does all kinds of things which are most certainly Geneva's Das, and he gets the buyers to buy the product. Now, he's not the seller, right? He's the salesman. He's the guy doing the lying. You're the guy doing the selling. So who's over on Geneva's Das? The salesman, the seller, or maybe nobody, or maybe both. The salesman, he lied through his teeth, got you to buy it, but he didn't make a cent off it. I mean, he just gets his salary. This is what he thinks he's paid to do. The seller didn't lie, didn't say anything. He just executed the sale. He's sitting in his office while the whole thing is going on. He didn't lie, he didn't say a single lie. The buyer comes to him, is already all prepped to buy. So, is neither of them ever gonna have his das? Is this like a perfect setup? The owner, yeah, the person who's actually making money on the sale. So what do you think? Knowing what you know, one person, both people, nobody, who's ever going to have his ass over here?
I think assuming he knows. Seller knows.
Seller knows, yeah. Let me take this a step further, just to make this clear. The way this question should be posed, this is one way to pose the question, but I think it's more of a global question in terms of Geneva's Das over here by Mekach Memkar. What is the nature of this Isser? We're going to have now, as we go along, we're going to have a couple of cases where it's a suffix. There's a machlekes ha-paiskin. Now we know suffix mamayna lakula, right? Amaytzu mechaver al uraya. Anytime there's a suffix in money, amaytzu mechaver al uraya. When it's a suffix iser, right? It's a chazer or anything. It's a suffix iser l'chumra. It's a deraisa, suffix iser deraisa l'chumra. We'll go for the time being, we'll assume it's an iser deraisa. Geneva's das. So it'll be suffix Isur l'chomer. So now we have one of these cases over here where it's going to be a machlokes. We'll have soon a machlokes igus meisha divri malkiel about how you present a product that you're trying to sell. You did a certain thing which Rav Meisha says you're allowed to do, and the divri malkiel says you're not allowed to do. So now what do we say now? Do we say okay, meitzchul v'raya, it's mamonis, so you can go ahead and sell it, or do we say no, it's a question. You might be doing a neves das. It's an isur. It's something isur l'chomer. How do we touch what's going on in this sugya? Another nafkamina is, let's say you know some guy is a dishonest salesman. He's dishonest, sells cars, if you want to be classic, or, you know, whatever, anything, he's dishonest. He's dishonest, he tricks people, the mechanic, they're dishonest, whatever it is. So, do you have an obligation? Now, generally, when someone is losing money, or someone's getting genizik, or someone's getting stolen from, there's a chiyuv of a Shabbos Aveda to go and save him from that loss. It's a mamonis digachiv. You have a mitzvah deraisa of lesucha lesalam and of Shabbos Aveda, that if you see someone getting nizik, he's getting stolen from, you have an obligation to tell him to stop it. But over here, it'll depend. Right, again, there's no, he's not losing money, and it's not a mekach tayis. He's just getting tricked, he's getting fooled, because the guy's being dishonest. So he's cornering him into a deal. So are you obligated to go and tell him? I'm not talking about is it mutter to tell him. Well, you don't want to get involved, right? You're not interested in having to schlep and get involved and get into a machlokes. Is there a chiyuv to tell because of a Shabbos Aveda? Or do we say, well, look, there's no mamonis getting lost. You're not losing any money. Again, it's going to be a fair price in the end, but he's being tricked. So that is a very, very important question to understand. How do we teach what exactly is going on in our sugya? So now, the way I was just explaining it before, where the Geneva's Das is stealing from someone the choice to buy. So, essentially, a salesman is the one who stole that choice. He was the one who convinced you to buy. He didn't get anything, though. So it's like a funny kind of sale. I stole, but I didn't get. Typically, Geneva, you have to get something. Now, there's another way to look at this, and I think Rabbi Kleiman was touching on it this morning. The other way to look at it is that the Geneva's Das is actually in the Chafetz itself. It's in the thing that's being sold. And the way you would look at it is that if I bought an item, and it's true, it didn't change the value, and it's true, it's not a Mekach Toyes, but nonetheless, I thought this product had X and X qualities. I thought it was newer. I thought it was better. I thought it was the best price in town. Whatever it was that you fooled me about, I thought it had those things. And you took my money based on my thinking that that's what this product was. So you took money for an assumption that was not true. There's the Geneva. The Geneva is not a mamonistic in the Geneva because there's no shavius that's being stolen, but it is a Geneva's Das. I took money for an assumption which is untrue. I took money through deceiving you. It was after the fact. It's not returnable. It's not collectible, but it is stealing something by taking the money for it. Now, if you understand that way, then it's most certainly going to be limited to the seller. It'll only be the seller that'll be over anything, because he's the only guy who's taking the money. The salesman, maybe a shakrin, and maybe, you know, I don't know, he's going to Ganeb, but he's not being over Ganeb's Das, because he is not the one that's actually getting anything from being deceptive. But if you look at it this way, it is more tied to the money. And it is possible to make an argument then that there would be a Hashavas Aveda here. You are being stolen from in terms of that your money has been taken under the wrong pretense, under a false pretense. Someone's taking money from you, shalike it in. Once it's done, too late. But then one can make an argument there would be a chiyuv of Hashavas Aveda to stop something like that from happening. So let me clarify. Let me give you a very common case that happens often. There, in many industries, there are kickbacks. So I'm going to pick one particular industry. I have nothing against that industry, but it happens quite a bit in that one. When people hire interior designers to help them design their home, so they tell you, this is the colors you should choose, and the colors of paints and the tiles. And then they tell you, okay, get this tile from that store, get the paint from that guy, make sure you get this guy to be your tiler, right? Say, okay, great. You know, you figure she or he must have your best interests in mind, and that's why they're recommending this. Get this particular tile from this particular store. Now, that's not the case. Reality is, she or he have a deal with that store, and they give the interior designer a kickback. She gets a percent, or he gets a percent from the sale. Not only that, but there are times when they actually inflate the cost of the product in order to be able to cover for the cost of giving the kickback to the said interior designer. So the person who is telling you to buy is effectively a salesman, right? Your interior designer, little did you know, is a salesman looking out for their own interests, selling a particular product which is not in your best interest to buy. Is it Mekach Tayez? No, it's a good product. Is it Aino? It's a fair price. It's just not the best price. And you could have gotten a better price somewhere else. And that is a perfect example of where you have a salesman who you didn't even know was a salesman, who's doing, convincing you to buy something, making their own profit on the deal, and then there's the person selling it. So now, when you come into that tile store, and you tell the owner, oh, I'm here because my interior designer sent me here. And so, oh, who's your interior designer? So-and-so. Now, at this point, if it's Gnevis Das, which it is, then the tile store has to tell you, you should know, I have a deal with that interior designer. By a show of hands, has anyone ever been told that when they went to buy something? I guess not. This is relevant across many, many industries because these kind of kickbacks they apply to everything. You hire someone, if you need something in an insurance industry, you know, you need an adjuster, your insurance broker will undoubtedly suggest one who they have a deal with, you know, they get a kickback from. It's literally every single industry works, you're all aware of it, that whatever service is being suggested to you by a particular provider that you're working with, undoubtedly, more often than not, they have some kind of a back-end deal with the other person who will give them a cut. Now, again, it's not necessarily bad. It could be that the person is the best in the business. It could be you're getting fear, but you are being deceived because you do think you're being given advice as to what's best for you when the truth is it's not what's best for you. It's just best for the person who's giving the advice. And that is why it's so crucial to really get to the bottom of this, who is being over on Ganeva's Das? Is the person doing this, giving the advice, being over on Ganeva's Das? Well, they're not really the one selling you the product. Is the person who's selling the product being over on Ganeva's Das? They didn't say a single lie. They didn't lie about anything about their product. It's all, you know, up front. So they're benefiting from the lie, but it's not them that are lying. So it's a very, very crucial question. And that would be another excellent question, which is, the way I would pose that question is like this. But let me just finish with this thought. So the way Levi Omer Li, and I had a hard time finding a good raya to this, but Levi Omer Li that they're both Omer Ganeva's Das. I don't think the two svaras are mutually exclusive, meaning they can both be a form of Ganeva's Das, which is the person selling it will be Omer Ganeva's Das because the bottom line is he's taking money for a product which he knows you are buying under a false pretense. You're buying it thinking that you're getting the best price. You're buying it thinking that this is what your interior designer holds is the best thing to buy, and it's all luxury. It's not true. So that, I think, they are very likely being over on Ganeva's Das. And I believe that the interior designer who is doing it, not because they're going to benefit directly from the sale, but they benefit in other ways because they get paid, is also being over on Ganeva's Das. They're not getting the money directly from you, but they're getting the money through you. They're getting the money through you losing money. Eventually, the money gets back to them. So I would imagine, and my assumption going forward, is that they both are touching on a serious issue of Ganeva's Das. But again, it's just a good thing to think about how it plays into the lumdus of what the Ganeva's Das really is in our sugya.
What if they really are doing the best deal?
What?
What if they really are giving you the best deal?
Right. So if ultimately they are, then there's no Gnevus Das going on. The fact that they're making money is okay. I don't think there's a problem that they're making money. You know, there's another, you were asking about Lifnei Iver. This is something I wondered about, which is also a little bit relevant to our sugya, is, you know, sometimes you go to a store and the salesman is busy trying to farkoif this thing to you, and he's telling you all kinds of things which you know are not true, right? He says, this is the best price in town. You know it's not true. You've already researched it. He says, you know, this has the this is the best quality product. There's nothing better than it. You know it's not true. It's lahadiyah not true. It happens to be you want to buy the product here anyway for whatever reason you have. Is there a mitzvah for you to tell him, listen, stop lying and just sell me the product? Because you're lying and doing an avera, and that's a chiyuv. There's a halacha of neivra like that, where, like, if you know someone's telling you lashon hara, and it happens to be he's allowed to tell you lashon hara, but he doesn't know that, so he's just telling you lashon hara, you have to stop him. Chafetz Chaim says you have to tell him, no, this is lute elis. Now go ahead and tell me what you want to tell me, right? So if he is busy, you know, trying to trick you. Now, what's interesting about this is that you could say, well, there's no gnevus das here, because bottom line is, I'm not getting fooled, right? But there is. It depends on the Mishnah of Hareza Kegoyne V'Sahayin. But the Mishnah says you're not allowed to take off the superficial top layer of a pile of wheat to make it look like it's totally soilus free, totally imperfection free, the perfect product of wheat. And you just took the top layer off. So you're Kegoyne V'Sahayin, as if you're tricking him. So the early Achrayim, Tais Yantav, and other Achrayim, they want to know, why is it only Kegoyne V'Sahayin? It's as if you're tricking them. You're tricking them. What else are you doing? You're taking off you're changing the superficial appearance of the product. So the Tais Yantav has one Teretz, which is the Chiddush, but Sefer Kol HaRamaz, early Sefer, and he says that the reason why it's only kid going to Vesayin, because there's no question, the buyer's not going to get fooled. He's going to stick his hand in, like any experienced buyer, and he'll check, and he'll see right away that this is just the top layer. But he says it's still awesome, because you're trying to fool him. And that doesn't make a difference of whether he gets fooled or not. That's the issue of kid going to Vesayin. If you do something deceptive, it doesn't make a difference if he's successful. Using deceptive sale practices is usur in and of itself, regardless if you're successful or not. That's what he says. You know, that's his pshat in the Mishnah. And so according to that, you actually would have to tell the salesman, listen, just stop. You know, just sell me the thing. Don't tell me about it. I know what's true and what's not true. Oh, anyway, just to summarize, what we're trying to understand here and examining the ramifications is, how do we understand what exactly the lumdus of this Isser of Gneva's Das by Mecha Chomemker is? Is the nature of the Gneva that you're stealing the choice to buy from the person? You're influencing them to buy dishonestly, so you're stealing that value from them? Or is the Gneva's Das that you're taking money for a product, you're taking money based on false claims, false value, false idea of the product, so you're taking money under a false claim, so even though there's no actual Geneva, because the money does equal, but it's a Geneva, there's the Geneva of Geneva's Das, and that's where we're trying to understand, how does it apply to the salesman, how does it apply to kickbacks, how does it apply to a buyer, and how do we look at the whole nature of Geneva's Das? Is it a mamonistiga kind of iser, which would then require a hashavas aveda, and it would be have different halachas by sveikis, or is it totally an iser of lying and fooling? Let's move on to the next part. Now, I want to just run quickly through the cases that we had in our sugya. We had one case of ein. Basically the same kind of idea. One is you can't aim Arab in Paris, but Paris, Chadash, and Yashan. That means that when someone requests a specific product, you can't give them a different product, even if the other product may be even a little better, but it's different. It's a different quality. It's a different degem. It's a different model. So even if they're close enough that it's not a Mekach Tayyas, it's no Oinah, it's still Asur, because again, you're fooling him. He wanted one, and you give him something else. The other halacha of the Mishnah is emar mayim biyayin, right? So you can't dilute wine by mixing water into it. And again, remember, we're talking about that it's not going to be a mekach tayis. You didn't put enough water in there that it totally, you know, destroyed the wine. No, just a little bit of water. It's not, I know, the price was still a fair price. Maybe he even gave you a lower price without you realizing. So the price was still a fair price, but bottom line is he thought he was getting 100% wine and he only got 95% wine, 5% water. The third case is La Yavar Malpia Maguro, which we just had, which is that you can't superficially remove imperfections from the top level because that makes it consider it looks like superficially it's better than it is. Then there was an interesting machlokes in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and the other Shito, La Yavar, which is an interesting case. You can't remove all the imperfections and make the thing look perfect. And the reason why the Chachamim, the Eistrim asked her in that case is because sometimes when you enhance a product, even though you're enhancing it honestly, but the end, when you're done, it makes it look like something way more valuable. For example, in this case, you put in an hour's worth of work to remove all the psilas. So it's true, you removed all the psilas, but it's an hour's worth of work. So I don't know how much that's worth, $100, $200. But now this guy says, oh my gosh, I've never seen wheat without psilas before, so this thing must be worth, there must be some super duper product and it's worth $1,000 more. So that's why you're effectively, even though you didn't do anything dishonest, but perfecting a thing in that way will give the buyer a misunderstanding about the product, and that's the machlokes of that case. And the last case of the Mishnah, which is, tends to be the most relevant, is the halacha of mefarchesin. Mefarchesin is you cannot cover up defects. You can't paint over defects. You can't present something as new when it's old, and you can't deceive by concealment. That's the sugya of mefarchesin. Now, each one is when they're mentioned in the Gemara comes with a specific heter, and it's those heterim that I want to focus on. So let's begin with the case of diluting wine. So the Mishnah says that diluting wine is aser, but if it is the minig hasaychrim, if that's the in that place everybody dilutes wine, then it's mutter. That's what the Mishnah said. That's a heter. That if you're in a place where everybody does it, then it's mutter. Now, as a rumor I heard, and tell me anybody if you heard this, many, I don't even remember when I heard it, it was years and years ago, that one of the gas stations on the 9 was bought by a frum person, and he became aware that almost all gas stations mix ethanol into the gas. Now, nowadays, all pumps say contains ethanol, but that was something that only began at about 2005 because that became legally required. This was before that. So before 2005, you didn't have to write on the pump that it contains ethanol. So all gasoline was diluted by ethanol, and ethanol is an inferior product. It doesn't burn as well as gasoline. It doesn't give as much energy as gasoline. So this guy became aware that all the gas stations are diluting their gas product with ethanol. So he went and he asked the Shiloh, can I do the same thing? Nobody is aware of it. Nobody knows that the product is being diluted with ethanol, but it just happens to be something that all the gas stations are doing. And again, if what I heard was correct, he was told that no, he has to say that he is putting ethanol into his product, which he did, and promptly went out of business. That's the way I heard the claim. Did anybody else ever hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, you heard the dips. Okay, so we'll see then. Actually, which way was the right sack? But you heard the story. You heard the story. Okay, I didn't verify the story. Okay, so let's think about the Shiloh for a minute. The Shiloh really is. Shiloh really is, how do we understand the heter over here? What is the heter of Makim Shenogul Lahatol Mayim B'Yayin Yatilu? That if the place where the minig is, they put water in the wine, you're allowed to. So one way to understand it, and it really seems like a lot of Achronim understand it this way, is that it's because you can assume that everybody knows. Right? Since you're in a place that this is what everybody does, they put water into the wine, so you don't have to assume that any tallis is going to happen. There's not going to be any deception because everybody does this. Everybody knows that this is the practice. This is what's being done. Now, again, obviously, if that's the understanding, so then that wouldn't apply to this ethanol case because nobody knew at that point. It was, even if everybody was doing it, nobody knew that it was being done. But it's not pashut at all that this is the pshat in the Mishnah. The Rav Shulchan Aruch, the graz that was in the packet, he says a fascinating thing. He's on the next Mishnah, which says you're not allowed to blow up the kirbayim, the innards of an animal, to make it look fatter, and you're not allowed to soak it in water to make it look fattier. And he says In minute kolakatzavim lasses came. But if all butchers do that, they soak their meat in water to make it look fattier. But hakol yoidim mimin hagam, and everybody knows that this is what they do. Yesh mi shemater. There is someone who is matter, and that's the sma in Shulchan Aruch, who is matter. Bases it on the Gemara in Chulin. Levisha ain't kind of know. There's no tricking here. Kimin shakol yoidim mimin hagam, because everybody knows that this is what's done. Rav says, Shoymer nafshe yirchek mizeh, but someone who cares, has yir shemayim, he should stay away from this. Because you might get that guy who's naive, and he actually thinks that it's a fatty piece of meat, and it's not just that you soaked it. If it is possible, there are a lot of fatty meats. That is why the butchers soak it, right? They want it to look fatty. So the resma says it's mutter, and Rav Shulchan Aruch says it might be mutter, but a yar shemayim shouldn't do it. Now both the sma and the Shulchan Aruch Harav do not quote our Mishnah, which I found very surprising. I mean, that should be the beginning of this. This is not a yesh mi shemater is a sma. It's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if makim shenagul hafel mayim b'yayin etilu. As Mishnah says, right? The Mishnah says that if the meaning of makam is that they put wine in the water in the wine, you're allowed to do it. So what is the whole deal over here? Why does the Sma have to bring a proof from a Gemara in Chulin, which is actually such an easy proof to understand? And the Rav Shulchan Aruch says maybe yeah, maybe not. Yoreh Shemayim. And the Mishnah says mutter. It doesn't even quote it. Now I thought maybe the difference is that maybe our Mishnah is talking about that absolutely everybody does it. So there's no way you don't know about it. Whereas in the case of the Sma or the Rav Shulchan Aruch, not everybody did it, but the Sma himself doesn't say that all butchers do it, but the Rav Shulchan Aruch says, very specifically, Minig kol hakatzavim lasses came. So he says, everybody does it, and he still has a tzad that it should be awesome. So I think that the way they understood our Mishnah is very differently. They understood that the reason why it's mutter in our Mishnah, if it's a makam that they dilute wine, the reason why it's mutter to dilute wine is because that's wine. In this place, that is the product. You're not misrepresenting, mislabeling, or misselling a product because that is the way this product is produced. That's the way, that's what goes into the production of wine in this place. Water is part of the production. So when you're buying wine in this place, that is what wine is defined as. It doesn't make a difference if you know or you don't know. You want to buy wine, this is wine here. I remember hearing years ago that someone asked Rav Yoina Herzog, Zichrono Livracha, the father of the whole wine industry. They wanted to figure out, you know, how much water is in the wine in order to know, you know, how much you could dilute it with. And for Arba Kaisis, it's a halacha, you have to know what the percentages are. And he told them that Zichazan is Vivul Kenzan Dorten is Shoin Dorten. You know, however much wine water is allowed to be there is already there. So it's legally speaking, actually, I researched it a little bit, and it does depend on the place. There is a certain amount of water that's allowed in wine production. So in the production of the wine, they're allowed to add water. So did any of you ever know that there's water in wine production? Does it make a difference if you don't know? You're buying wine, and as long as that's the way wine is produced, it doesn't make a difference to you anymore. That's wine. Wine has water. So it's a very different way to understand the heter of the Mishnah. It's not relying on people knowing. It's just redefining what the product is. Now, and according to that, the gasoline would have been mutter, because if the fact is that all gasoline is diluted with ethanol, it doesn't make a difference if you know or if you don't know. That is what gasoline is. That is the reality of what gasoline is. Now, if according to that, it makes sense why the Rav Shulchan Aruch, in his case, didn't want to apply this heter, because if you're doing something very different, you're taking meat and you're soaking it, that's nothing to do with the production of meat. That has nothing to do with what the product is. You're just changing. You're trying to make it look better than it is. You're doing something deceptive. So their only heter would be that people know you're being deceptive, so they're not being deceived. So that Rav Shulchan Aruch says, I don't know who says you could be Simach on that. If you got one guy that doesn't know, you were just over in Avera. If you're a Shomer Nafsho, you shouldn't rely on them. And that's a very significant question in halacha, because so often where the reliance of people is that, well, everybody does it, so everybody knows. Right? I'll give you an example. One thing I found was, there is in the industry today, there is one way of advertising is through social media influencers, right? So someone has a podcast or a blog or whatever it is, and their particular expertise is makeup, let's say, right? So there's no women here, so we're good. So their particular expertise is makeup. That's what they talk about on their blog, and they talk about how to do it and what to do it, so they're considered an expert on the product. And then, in the middle of their podcast or whatever it is, they say, oh, you know, there's this fantastic product made by so-and-so, awesome product, I use it myself, and it's a great product, and everybody should go out there and buy it. Now, they don't say that I was paid by that person to make an advertisement. They don't say that, but that is what it is. It's a regular paid advertisement. Essentially, all you're doing is looking at an ad in a magazine. It's just being presented by an influencer. The only difference is that being that the person who's presenting it is not saying they're being paid, and they're giving off the impression that, listen, I am an expert in this product. I'm an expert in perfume and makeup, and I'm telling you this is an awesome product. So now a person will go and buy it, and they'll go to the store and say, I heard this influencer saying this is a wonderful product, I want to buy it. They're only buying it because they think that it is, that person honestly thinks it's a great product. Now, you could say, well,
I'm telling you something, I'm paid to say it, but I really believe it's true.
Well, let's start first. What if they don't believe it? You're assuming they believe it. Let's say they don't. They're only saying it because they're paid. They don't believe it's the best product. It's a good product.
They're saying it's a good product. They're saying go
buy it. No. They're saying, based on my expertise, this is the product you should buy. That is giving an impression which is not true. It's convincing someone to buy based on hanach, which is not true. I'm not saying to buy it because it's a good product. I'm saying to buy it because I'm being paid to tell you that. That's a different sugya. I'm not saying Shin again. It's not getting into Shin again. No, Gnevus does.
Why is it not?
What's the difference? What you're fooling the person about? What's your hanacha? Let's start with what your hanacha is, Rabbi Roth.
I keep hearing that Gnevus das means when I have the gears to make a decision. When I'm saying things that I believe to be true, but it's not maybe the only reason why I'm telling you to buy it because I have making.
No, so let me clarify. That's not the nakuda of the problem. The nakuda of the problem is this. If I convince you to buy something and I make you think that it has a certain value which it does not, that's Gnevus Das, right? That we agree on.
You said it doesn't have that value.
Well, so now, let's say I tell you this is the best price in town. It's not the best price in town. It's a good price, but it's not the best price in town. Is that Gnevus Das?
Possibly.
That's Gnevus Das. So if I tell you that Pliny uses this.
When I say the best price,
yeah.
Everyone knows what that means.
So okay, we'll get to that. Everybody knows in a minute.
Word best.
Everybody knows is what I'm actually touching here. No, but you say there's nobody who has a better price in town. You lie.
You possibly knows he can't know that. He didn't go to every store.
Okay, good. Al-Gabani, he says that, right? He says that nobody has a better price. Now he says another. Hold on, he says another lie. He says Pliny uses my product, right? Not true. Doesn't. Now that Pliny is someone who's an expert in the field and is a maven. And I say he uses the product, he does not. Is that Gnevus Das?
Possibly.
Okay, we're getting places. So now, over here, this influencer is saying, I use this product. She used it once when they sent it to her, right? I use this product because it's a wonderful product. So it's not a lie, she used the product, but she did not use the product because it's a wonderful product. She used the product because she was paid. She used the product. So she's giving an... Why is that not the typical case?
When the person is saying, they're saying, it's a very good product, I used it, I liked it, it was very good. They're talking. They didn't say any real factual information saying that it's the best
product. Well, we have a whole sieve here. Who's I imagine has been listening to podcasters selling products. Have you ever gotten that feeling that the guy is saying or the woman is saying that this is the absolute best product that there is and I wouldn't use anything else? Raise your hand if yes. Right, I think that's a significant number of people that it's a cheshash of Gnevus Das. Look, I myself wasn't aware. I heard these influencers talking and I didn't chap. Maybe I'm naive. But I didn't chap they're being paid. And then I found out that they were. And I also found out, I found out that now by law, they have to say, they have to disclose that they're being paid. So I felt good. I'm not the only person who's naive. Enough people who are naive that changed the law. Well,
the guy has a ladder having the gears.
That's what I was just saying.
He's a ladder having the gears when he gives advice.
And you don't disclose
no answer. If you hold it's a bad answer, you're not going to give it.
You hold because you're the gears. That's the heft of the gears. That's what the gears
is. You're not going to have the gears when you say
it. You can't say I don't have the gears and you have the gears.
1 second. Where does it say when you give an answer, you're not going to have the gears?
I didn't say it all.
Now, I agree having Nagias is not the problem. The problem is that the Nagias often takes away the whole value of what you're saying. If the whole reason why I'm trusting you is because I think you honestly think like that, not because you're being paid to think like that.
By definition, they're here to influence. And not here to give you informed information.
Okay, so, listen. So here's the point I want to say. This is exactly the point I want to make. Now, we could make this argument. Hold on for a second. We can make this argument, and Vitaka could argue about this, but I think it really boils down to the Rav Shulchan Aruch. You could say that everybody should know this. Everybody should understand this. Everybody should realize that that's what's going on. The Rav Shulchan Aruch says, if there's one person that will not think like that, and I'll raise my hand, I was that one person, so I know there's at least one person like that, and then there's another. So, if there are people who are not going to think like that, then you will be over on Geneva's ass with those people who are being misled by what you are promoting. So therefore, Shaymer Nafshoy, Yerchim is according to the Rav Shulchan Aruch, Al Kapon.
Okay.
That
one.
Well, that yours?
But one more thing. The Rav Shulchan Aruch is talking about when you do a pu'ula that makes the thing look like meat. Now you have two pieces of meat. One is real, and one is fake. This guy did something and made it look fake. And he's there to fool you. This person is simply giving you, trying to influence you. You may have one person that will be Ati Anafshay. He'll talk to get influence.
That's not exactly Ati Anafshay, but he's buying exactly what you're selling. That's what he's. It's not Ati Anafshay.
Now he's tying the item differently. He's not making it look like a fat item. Telling you advice. Giving advice.
But that's what I was makdim. So do we agree that Geneva's Das can exist in other forms? We do, right? It doesn't have to only be in the Rav Shulchan Aruch case. Okay. We agree to disagree. I just want to move on to the last point. We're out of time. I want to just move on to the last point. Hold on.
An ad. That's not advice.
Let's move on to the let's move on to the last category of the heter in our sugya, which is a very important heter. Maybe this is the most important one. So, just give me a few minutes on this one. So, there's a very core question about the whole sugya, which everybody really came here to hear. That's the truth. And that is, how much do we put the onus on the buyer, and how much do we put the onus on the seller? Every time you sell a product, you sell a house, you rent a house, you sell a car, etc. So, there's going to be issues, there's going to be things about it. How much is it the responsibility of the seller to disclose? And how much is it the responsibility of the buyer to do research and to do due diligence to find out what exactly is the issue here? In our Gemara, we have a couple of cases where the Gemara demonstrates that we put the responsibility on the buyer. The Gemara says, Rav Acha Matir B'davra HaNitam. So if the wine was mixed with other wines, being that the debt, typically when you buy wine, you sample the wine. If you sample the wine, you'll be able to tell. So it's Dabra Nitam. So Rav Acha Matir, which means that even though the particular buyer in question may not have sampled the wine for whatever reason, and he bought it nonetheless, well, that was his problem, right? It was his onus was upon him to sample it. He didn't. His problem. But that's Rav Acha's heter. Rav Acha Matir B'Dabra Nitam, because the onus was on the buyer. Now, the big question is, how far do you go with this? And let me give you an example. You have an apartment. This apartment suffered from mold, or it suffered from water damage. Okay, that's a fact. Now, you did remediation. You paid someone to take care of the mold. You took care of the water damage. And now you want to paint over it. So you do. You paint over it. And now the guy's coming to rent the house, or rent the apartment, or buy the car. So do you need to disclose that? Do you need to say, well, there was a mold problem and I did take care of it, and now everything looks as good as new? Or do you not have to say that at all? Now you're going to say, well, how is the buyer going to find out? Very simple. They'll ask the previous tenant. And the previous tenant will say, yeah, of course, there was mold here, that's why I moved out, you know. So it's possible to find out. Again, I'm talking about cases, let me be specific. I'm talking about cases where it is possible for the buyer to find out. They do their diligence, they do their research, they'll get the information. It's there, it's available. Classic, you sell a car, a used car. So, you know, the assumption is you're going to bring it to a mechanic. If you bring it to a mechanic, they'll be able to tell whatever it is that you're thinking of saying or not saying. They'll be able to tell. For example, your car got into an accident. You had the accident all fixed up nicely. The mechanic will pop the hood. He'll tell you in 3 seconds, okay, this car has been in an accident. So do you have to disclose that the car has been in an accident? Or is the onus on the buyer? He's going to bring it. He needs to bring it to a mechanic. And if he chooses not to, then he's the one who is fooling them. Who is the onus upon? And this is a tremendous shaila. And it affects almost every single tier. Now, of course, if there's something you're deceiving the buyer about that he has no way of finding out, so that's a problem. You can't deceive them about something he has no way of finding out. But I'm talking about something he could find out if he does the diligence. Are you responsible to disclose, or is he responsible to do diligence? So Reb Moshe has a tshuva about it, where he goes in one direction, and the Divrei Malkiel has a tshuva where he goes in a very, very different direction. Reb Moshe's tshuva was about what butchers did. They sprayed blood over the livers to make them look like fresh. They were just shechted and harvested today. And they had a number of halachic questions with that, and it was a lot of machlokes between him and the other contemporary paiskim who lived at the time, once he got here already to New York. But then they also discussed whether there's a Geneva's Das issue, that by putting blood on it, you're making it look like it's fresh. And he was discussing whether this falls under a mefarkasin, which is, mefarkasin means that it's you take something that's old, you paint it, and you make it look new. So Reb Moshe says that this is not a problem of a mefarkasin. Why? He says a mefarkasin is only when you take something which is old and you make it look new. So you've done something to change the nature of the appearance to be deceptive. It was old and you're making it look new. You're deceiving, you're doing a practice which is deceiving. He says spraying blood on a piece of meat makes it difficult to tell if it's new or if it's old. There are old pieces of meat that have blood on them too. So it's just hard now to tell. And therefore, it's upon the buyer to ask, is it new or is it old? When was it shechted? So he says the onus becomes on the buyer. And if he chooses not to ask, then Iyud Aten Afshay, he is deceiving himself. And he goes on to prove it from the Gemara. We don't have time to go through it, but you can take a look. He proves it from the Gemara, actually, first Seder Gemara. Now, again, Reb Moshe's hanocha here is what's fascinating. His chilek is okay, we could hear it, that there's sometimes you're being deceptive, which is you're making something old look new, and sometimes you're just covering something in a way where you just can't tell. You don't know if it's this or if it's that, and therefore his heter is that the onus is upon the buyer to do due diligence. That's the way he's matter it. The reason why you're not deceiving him is because he has to ask, and if he doesn't ask, it's Iyudat and Afshay. Now, I was wondering, and I'm aware that this may be a stretch, that how far would Ramesh go with this? Would he allow you to paint over your mold and your water damage in your apartment? And again, I'm not talking about this actual mold there. I don't think he would go that far. But that would probably be like Eim Farchasin. But if there's no mold anymore, there's no water damage anymore, can you paint it over and then not disclose? Because all you're doing is you're making it difficult to tell. It's still possible to find out. You can still ask about it. You can still get that information. But all you're doing is doing what's pretty much standard. Everybody paints an apartment before they rent it out. So that would be... What is the chesaron in that apartment had about water damage? It may have it again. So that's always a possibility, right? If whatever it was that caused it, you want to know that, right? I understand. But, you know, that you would want to know it, right? Wouldn't you want to know that? You wouldn't? I would. I'll give you a case. I bought a car, and before I bought the car, I was told by someone else that looked at the car that this car has a terrible smell. It's an old car. So I looked at the car. It didn't have any smell. So the owner had done something to get rid of the smell. Now, there was a very good chance that smell will come back. when, you know, it gets wet, it gets humid outside. It was a good chance. I took that chance. I bought the car, Baruch Hashem. The smell didn't come back. The car got totaled anyway. but regardless, that was an informed decision, but it could have easily been an uninformed decision. I would have not known about it at all if the person before me didn't tell me. And that's something I would want to know. And I don't know if I'm entitled to know that, right? That is the question here. In other words, the question is, who is the onus upon? Sorry? Well, it had a chisaron, and that chisaron is very possibly still there, right? Or it could still cause problems in the future. Anyway, this is a shaila. Divrei Malkiel is very much choilik. It's very much choilik under Moshe. And the Divrei Malkiel says, a big chiddush l'chumra. The Divrei Malkiel says that even he says, if you paint over a chisaron, and you tell the person you did that, he says, still awesome. Why? He says, because once you paint over it, they have no way of estimating it anymore. The only way they could figure out how much damage was here and how bad it was and how big of a problem it was is if you let them see it. But if you paint over it, now there's no way for them to tell, and it doesn't even help to tell them you did it. It's still an isser of Gnevis Das. That's how far the Divrei Malkiel goes with this, and he proves it. He says, because the Gemara said, the Mishnah says there's a heter that makom shed nagu lasis kain. There's a heter by diluting wine and water. That's the only place it says it. It doesn't say it in the other cases. It doesn't say it by mefarchasin. It doesn't say that if everybody paints over, you're allowed to paint over. Why doesn't it say it anywhere else? He says, because it doesn't apply anywhere else. Anywhere else, once you paint over, there's no way for you to tell. Okay, time is up. I want to finish up. We can speak after. But just to summarize what we've said here, We discussed that there's two sugyas of Gnevis Das. In Chulin, we learned about Gnevis Das in tricking someone that they owe you a favor. In our sugya, the sugya is Gnevis Das in the Mekach, that even though there's no Mekach Tayis, but they're buying it under a false claim, under a false advertising, and as a result, we can either understand that you stole the ability to choose from them, or you can understand that you took money from them under a false claim, and that will determine where exactly the Geneva is taking place. Is it taking place in just his das, or is it taking place in the chafetz? And we discussed, does that apply when you have a salesman who's not making any money directly from your sale, and then you have the seller who didn't do any lying? Who exactly is the one who's over Geneva's das? The seller, the salesman, both, or maybe neither? And then we discussed how to categorize this kind of Gnevis Das. Is it a Mamanis? Is there a Shavas Aveda? And then we talked about the five different categories of Gnevis Das in this sugya, mixing wine and water, taking superficially changing something. And then we discussed two out of the three Heterim I wanted to discuss, but to the two Heterim we discussed is Minigas Seichrim. What's the Yisoida Heter that everybody does it? Is it a Heter because we assume everybody knows, that we saw the Rav Shulchan Aruch wasn't so excited about? Or is it a Heter that once everybody does something to a product, then at certain things you do to a product just becomes part of the production of the product, and therefore you don't need anybody to know? That's simply what the product is, and the Nafkamina was whether you can do other things to make the product look better, and we demonstrated how this may possibly apply to kickbacks, influencers. And then we talked about the heter of Dabra HaNitam. Is the onus on the buyer? Is the onus on the seller? And how Rav Moshe understands it, how Rav Malkiel understands it, which is a very relevant discussion. When can you cover up and assume that it's the responsibility of the buyer to find out? And when is it responsibility of the seller? Shkayo.